And so how has coming here changed, given you a different perspective, or have you learned anything? Or are you saying that you only learned that in this last week?
We have learned a lot of different things. Some of these roads that we have now were like, before, like they had these roads, they were like paths that the natives took. So they took those, turned them into roads and whatnot. And they did a lot of stuff and got rid of all that. You can barely tell that they were even there at one point.
From all of the things that you've learned, what are some really important lessons that you want to make sure that the next generation understands? What is some of that knowledge that you think is really important to pass on?
Maybe. For them to know that Wisconsin really isn't their home, it's from New York. And hopefully they get to come out here one day and learn the stuff that we did.
Or else we take them. Because, like, we had just like Sean and Winona did, we could probably be the ones to take them, teach them all this stuff.
And just pass it on and pass it on.
Yep. Be like, oh, old man Sean or old woman Winona.
And you'll know so much more then. What I've heard this afternoon at Freedom Square was learning, understanding the river and how it heals, and that we need to stop polluting it so that it can heal itself and heal us. What are some important messages that you think non-Indigenous people need to understand for a better future?
Not everything was theirs, and they can't just do whatever they want.
The fact that colonists came in and just took when things were not to be taken, but also people were living on those lands. Is that what you mean?
Yes.
How do you feel like your generation is making a big difference? You were talking about intergenerational trauma. What do you think the role of your generation is?
It's a lot different because normally you used to see kids outside and whatnot. You don't because now all these electronics are on those, so they don't really learn much. Because they're always on, like, electronics and whatnot. So they don't actually figure out a lot of stuff about their culture and whatnot.
Unless they look it up. Or unless
you
they're,
think
like,
they will?
Some people will. You wouldn't
you
know that,
think
though. I have.
So the internet has allowed you to learn a little bit about your culture?
Yeah. I mean, there's a museum next to where me and Nautica live. Like, two.
The library.
Yeah, the library. Yeah. And they'd be like, like, sometimes I look up, like, things about our culture and stuff. And then, like, of course, animals. But mostly our culture.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank the three of you for coming on to Hudson Mohawk Magazine. Do you want to leave us with any hopes for the future?
Hopefully the Hudson River's cleaner. Eventually people can swim in it.
Basically the ocean, in fact, like anything.
Especially
and hopefully more people come back here.
And especially people throwing plastic there. It's like lots of plastic in the water. And yeah. Just so that they don't like keep on littering in the ocean.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
This is Otis M. Carson. I'm from NYC, and you're listening to WGXC Acra Hudson Catskill.
On Saturday, July 22nd, turn out or tune in to Wave Farm for a day of percussion at the Marimba Tree in celebration of Charles Staub's Churl Proscenium. Charles Staub's Churl Proscenium will be the 13th installation at Wave Farm's Art Park. And on Saturday, July 22nd, it'll be inaugurated from noon to 6 p.m. with a day of percussionist performances. Those percussionists include Lisa Stoneberg and Leah Bowden, Zuki Legba and special guests, Chris Corsano and Bobby Previtt. And Saturday, July 22nd's performances are part of Upstate Art Weekend, which is at Wave Farm and many other locations. Tune in or turn out to a day of percussion at the Marimba Tree in celebration of Charles Staub's Chiral Proscenium, Saturday, July 22nd from noon to 6 p.m. in the Wave Farm Art Park in Accra.
Wave Farm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Wave Farm and WGXC operate and broadcast. The Mohicans name themselves the people of the waters that are never still following their arrival along the Great Ebb Tide River, also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations and in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For more information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge-Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit mohican.com.
I was just going to lie down for 5 minutes, take a little nap.
Yeah, a regular Rip Van Winkle.
Who?
Another guy that took a little nap, woke up and didn't know where he was.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Accra, Catskill, and Hudson. Listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson. And I have a special guest with me today. What's your name?
Mila.
And where are you from?
I'm from Portland.
And how old are you?
9. So I'm about 10.
And how are you connected to me?
She is my aunt.
Yes. Mila is my sister's daughter, my niece. And we're also in a book club together. You want to tell our listeners about our book club?
So in our book club, we choose a book, and my grandma and Emily and me read together.
And we sometimes read it together, like over Zoom, because we're separated. We're all in different states. And so sometimes we do it through Zoom and we read together, but every once in a while we can't meet over Zoom and we have to decide, like, let's read up to chapter 30. And then we all read up to chapter 30 so that when we get to talk on Zoom again, we can pick up where we left off. And we've read some really great books. Do you have any favorite books that you've read with either me or Nana?
No, not really.
None? I have so many. Can you guess what my favorites are?
The Tale of Despolo.
I do love that one. I also loved The Beatrice Prophecy, also by Kate B. Camillo.
Oh, I like that one.
And, but probably one of my favorites was from The Mixed Up Files of Mrs. Basil E. Frankweiler.
That's one of my favorites, too.
It's so good. And I don't know if I read it when I was a kid or not. I can't remember. But I finally read it as a 40-plus adult. And it's so good. And I feel like it's a little dated. Like, there's things that are a little different with technology, but it still is a great book. But that's really fun sharing books together. Highly suggest it for listeners out there who have fellow family members that they like to read with or have similar taste in books with. Our most recent one has been, what was it, Maisie Chen. What's the full title? I forget. Maisie Chen's Last
Pants.
By, is that Lisa C? Lisa Yi, right? That sounds right. And that's really good too. I accidentally finished it. I felt really bad. I wasn't able to read with you all for a bit. And then I was on an airplane ride and was listening to the audiobook, and I wasn't paying attention to when they said the chapter numbers. And then all of a sudden it was like the end. But it was really good. Maybe I'll talk about that on a future show.
Don't spoil it.
I won't spoil it. We're a spoil-free show here for the most part. We try.
Okay.
You want to talk about a book?
Yeah, so I'm talking about Real Friends I got from the library. It's really good. It's a comic. It's about the author named Shannon.
Shannon Hale? Yeah, Shannon Hale, and right?
The back, it actually has pictures of her from when she was a kid. It also... This is the thing from the below. My best friends are not forever. Shannon and Adrienne have been best friends ever since they were little. But one day, Adrienne starts hanging out with Jen, the most popular girl in the class, and the leader of a circle of friends called the group. Everyone in it wants to be Jen's number one, and some girls would do anything to stay on top, even if it means bullying the others. Now every day is like a roller coaster for Shannon. Will she and Adrienne stay friends? Can she stand up for herself? And is she and the group are out? And that's the back of the book. Mm-hmm. It's really good. And each chapter is about a different person. Like this chapter, the first chapter is about Adrienne. And then the second chapter is about
a long chapter.
Yes, so very long chapters. The next chapter is about Jenny. Actually, the next chapter is about Jen, and then it's about Jenny. Then it's about Zara and Veronica, and the next chapter is Wendy, and then the next chapter.
A lot of friends. Or are some of them not friends?
Well, they're just characters in the book. And they'll battle character in the book.
So some of them might be friends and some might be other, might be frenemies.
And that's the book.
Yeah. So what do you like the most about it? The characters?
I like the characters and how it's really interesting. You don't really know what's happening next. And also the different emotions and the pictures are really good.
Yeah. I like the artwork. Shannon Hale's artwork is great.
It's not by Shannon Hale's.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I forgot. It's Leiwen Pham does the art.
Yeah, Leiwen Pham is the art, and Shannon Hale is the author.
Yes, I forgot. I made a mistake. But I love Leiwen Pham's art. They also, do you know they're the same duo that did Princess in Black?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, they partner together a lot.
Should I say that I realized that Adrienne... In one of the pictures, she kind of looks like Princess in Black.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, let me show you. That's which cool.
I remember when you were little, you used to love Princess in Black. And I can't say that I have any issue with that because they were really fun to read.
They're good, just they're kind of too. They're kind
a little young for you now. But they were fun when you were a kid. I had fun reading them out loud, especially when there's goats and the monsters.
So are you going to talk about any books?
I will, but I did want to say about that book and that whole series, because there's, I think it's a trilogy. I can't remember. There's at least two books out. There might be three. But I love that it's based on her childhood. It's not like a direct, like scene for scene, line for line biography, but it's inspired by her childhood. And it feels like it feels really relatable, like things that either I experienced or I saw in life. And I like that, the exploration of childhood and shifting friendships. I forget what grade they're in that book. You remember?
In what book?
In Real Friends?
It's from fifth. It's like a bunch of different grades. They start kindergarten and go fifth grade.
Oh, okay. So the book that I wanted to share today is actually the second book in the series. So I wanted to briefly mention what the first book is about, and I'll try not to give too much away. So the book series is called Cat's Cradle, and it's by Joe Roux. I'm not sure how to pronounce it because it seems French, but it's R-I-O-U-X. Rio, maybe? I'm not sure. But so the first book was called The Golden Twine, and she actually released it as a graphic novel many years ago, back in 2012. So over a decade ago, she released the first book. And I don't think the second book ever got released. And then a couple of years ago, a different publisher picked up the book and she adjusted it a little bit, you know, did some new artwork. And so I read the first one and really liked it. And then the second one just came out and I just read it and it was also very good. And I'm excited to read more because it's like a continuing tale. So the first one is called The Golden Twine. And in it, you meet the main character whose name is Sori. And she is an orphan who's in a traveling caravan. And she decides that she wants to become a monster tamer. She thinks she has what it takes. And then one time she unknowingly steals something from a creature called a Caitsef, which is like a cat monster. So it's like a sort of like a werewolf type thing where it's a person. They sometimes look like a person and they sometimes look like a cat monster.
I have a question. What does it take to like be a monster tamer?
That's a good question. I don't remember if she has any specific skills in the first one, although she does seem to have a way of communicating with at least the gentler of monsters. And she seems to have a good sense of like figuring out how to navigate scenarios with them. So I think that's part of it. She does at some point find a tool that will help her with that too, that requires some kind of energy thing to happen. But even in the second book, she's still trying to figure out how to work that. So in the first book, she's dealing with her trying to figure out some skills and like also having this run-in where she accidentally steals something from a Caitsef that's valuable to them. And so then she's like trying to figure out her powers quickly so that she doesn't get in trouble with them. And then the second book picks up where the first one left off, and it is called Cat's Cradle, The Mole King's Lair. And in this one, she's traveling with a sort of giant dog creature. It's very sweet, but it's very big and easily scares people. And then she has a tiny little imp creature that is also traveling with her. And there's some stuff going on with the Caitsefs, and they're all trying to find treasure. Sori is trying to make her way to a place where she thinks she might be able to figure out the story of her. Caitsef, I think, I assume is a made-up word, or at least for this book. I don't know about if it is outside of this book, but it's the name for the cat monster.
Okay.
So it's like so she's trying to make her way. She's on a journey to try to end up in a place where she thinks she might be able to figure out some things about her birth parents. Because as I mentioned, she's an orphan and doesn't know her birth parents. And so she's on a journey. And to get there, she needs some money to get food and shelter and all that stuff. So she's trying to make money, but her sidekicks keep accidentally scaring people away. She'll be like making progress, get a job, and then a giant dog creature comes up and scares everybody. But along the way, they meet someone who found treasure, who's a little bit mysterious themselves, and we know a little bit about him from some other action in the book, but they end up going to the Mole King's lair. There's a mountain where there's a town where people used to go and mine in this town, and then at some point people stopped coming back, and so they believe the mountain is cursed and they don't mine anymore, and so the town is kind of falling into disrepair. But she's trying to go there to get some gold so that she can make it on her journey. And then the prince is also trying to find this gold. And so is trying to convince the villagers to go into the mountain. But then of course there's some moles and a mole king in there that they have to be careful of. So it's a lot of like adventure. There's some funny parts. There's some good like character development of all the various characters. I like the addition of the new character that they meet along the way. And I like that it sort of it has some closure to the main story, but it also set, like, she's still on her journey. She hasn't made it to her end goal yet. And she's still working on figuring out her magic skills. So it's fun following along on her adventures. The artwork is fun. I like the creepy cat monster creatures. They're mostly like, they're villainous. They're not as creepy as they are villainous, although they're a little creepy. And the mole creatures are fun too. But yeah, so that is second book in the Cat's Cradle series by Joe Riel, R-I-O-U-X. And it's called The Mole King's Lair. And now I probably have to wait another year for the third book, is my guess. But it'll come eventually. But yeah, so that was my latest graphic novel read. I also read a good one that's more for teens that's called Monstrous, that is a memoir about the author's experience growing up as a transracial adoptee. So she was raised by two parents who are both white, who adopted both her and her sister, who is not her birth biological sister, but she has a sister who's also adopted. They were both from Korea. And so it's about her navigating growing up in a culture that isn't her birth culture, not knowing the story of her parents and why they chose to give her up for adoption. And then just in general, feeling very different, both in the community where she's growing up, but also just feeling different due to the way that she interacts with the world and the things she was interested in. And it's called Monstrous because there are times where she sort of internalized that she was a monster and that that's how she saw herself, but also how she felt like other people saw her. And it's a really beautiful book. It does follow her from like being little to being a teen. I can't remember if it goes past high school, but there's some like more serious issues like bullying and there's some language. So I wouldn't say it's for middle grade audience, but it's a really good teen graphic novel memoir. And that's Monstrous by Sarah Meyer. Those are my two books for today. Do you want to tell our listeners what Maisie Chen's is about?
Maisie Chen is about this girl who's Chinese, but she grew up in America, and she visits her grandparents for the summer. Then she realizes she visits them because her grandpa is getting old and they think he might die. And during the time, there's a lot of her adventures. Like, for example, one of the Bud the Bear goes missing.
Oh, yeah. And so there's, to explain to our listeners, there's a bear, like a wooden sculpture of a bear outside of the restaurant that her grandparents ran.
Yeah, there's a wooden sculpture of a bear of the restaurant, in front of the restaurant, their grandparents are, that's the call about the bear, and he went missing. And also, it was, along the way, her grandpa is telling her stories about one of her relatives named Lucky. And
the restaurant's named after, right?
And we're learning about Lucky and also learning about her time around with her grandparents and the adventure they're having.
Yeah, that is a very good summary. You're a good summarizer. I really liked that book a lot. I liked the mix of the like historical stories that she hears about, like the Lucky stories that her grandfather tells her, and then like the day-to-day adventures and the Bud mystery, the missing bear mystery.
I like the lucky stories more than the day-to-day stories.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. I think towards the end, I got more into the day-to-day because I don't know how far you've gone, so I don't want to say anything, but I liked the mystery stuff with Bud the Bear. And I liked some of the, like, learning about some of the other characters that are in the story. Oh, the other cool thing is because they run a Chinese restaurant. So that's part of the story, is the restaurant used to be a different style of restaurant, like more like standard American fare. And then at some point it became a Chinese restaurant. But one of Maisie Chen's jobs during the summer is helping out at the restaurant. And she gets to do something really fun, which is write out fortunes for the fortune cookies. And sometimes she personalizes them, which I think is fun and funny.
No, she always personalizes them.
Yeah, but sometimes they're really personal. Like, I don't know if you've gotten to the part where there's a couple on the date and the guy is not very nice.
I got to that part a while ago.
Okay. I couldn't remember where it was in the book, but there's the guy that's not very nice and she makes a fortune for the woman that says you could do better. And the woman gets a laugh out of it.
And he gets super angry.
I wonder if she showed him. But they might not realize that she's typing them up. Because she has a certain technique that she has for like taking the cookie and making it so that it's soft enough that you can open it. And then you put the fortune in, and then you close it again. So I thought it was cool.
Yeah, she microwaves them. Mm-hmm. I also want to try it out.
Could try it. You should get some Chinese takeout and try it. Maybe I'll try it sometime.
Try it and tell me how it works out.
Okay. I'll try it next time I get Chinese food. Anyways, it is a great book. I'm excited to see what we read next. How far do you still have to go in it?
I don't know. I'm more than halfway.
It's taking a little bit more time than usual because it's summer. Amila has camp.
Camp.
Well, in honor of my co-host Fatia, who is not here, but who often shares a poem on the radio, I thought I would share a poem on the radio. How do you feel about that?
Feel good about that.
Okay. So I just found a poem on poets.org. They have a poetry for kids section, and there was a poems kids like category. And I found one that I remember reading before and finding fun. And so I thought I'd read that. It is called Maggie and Millie and Molly and May. And it's by E.E. Cummings. Maggie and Millie and Molly and May went down to the beach to play one day. And Maggie discovered a shell that sang so sweetly she couldn't remember her troubles. And Millie befriended a stranded star whose rays 5 languid fingers were. And Molly was chased by a horrible thing which raced sideways while blowing bubbles. And May came home with a smooth round stone as small as a world and as large as a loan. For whatever we lose, like a you or a me, it's always ourselves we find in the sea. Felt like a good summertime poem, Maggie and Millie and Molly and May by E.E. Cummings. I like the horrible thing which raced sideways while blowing bubbles. Well, I wonder what it was. I'm not sure.
Maybe a crab.
I was thinking a crab. There was one time I was somewhere, I think it was off the coast of Washington, and there were giant crabs, and they were, you know, doing their sideways walk, but he was definitely like spitting water, probably blowing some bubbles too. I like that part. And Molly was chased by a horrible thing which raced sideways while blowing bubbles. More poems by this poet. See, I like this site a lot, because if you like one poem, you might like others by the same one.
Or you might not,
that's true.
We might love one of the poems and absolutely hate the rest.
True. Let's see, I'm going to read one more. Oh, here's one that sounds similar to Millie and Molly and May, or I forget the other name, I missed one name. Maggie and Millie and Molly and May, something like that. So this one is Winkin', Blinkin' and Nod. By Eugene Field. Winking, blinking, and nod, one night sailed off in a wooden shoe, sailed on a river of crystal light into a sea of dew. Where are you going and what do you wish? The old moon asked the three. We have come to fish for the herring fish that live in this beautiful sea. Nets of silver and gold have we, said Winking, Blinking, and Nod. The old moon laughed and sang a song, and as they rocked in the wooden shoe, and the wind that sped them all night long ruffled the waves of dew. The little stars were the herring fish that lived in the beautiful sea. Now cast your nets wherever you wish, never afraid are we. So cried the stars to the fishermen three, Winking, Blinking, and Nod. All night long their nets they threw to the stars in the twinkling foam. Then down from the skies came the wooden shoe, bringing the fishermen home. 'Twas also pretty a sail, it seemed, as if it could not be. And some folk thought 'twas a dream they dreamed of sailing that beautiful sea. But I shall name you the fishermen three, Winking, Blinking, and Nod. Winking and Blinking are 2 little eyes, and Nod is a little head. And the wooden shoe that sailed the skies is a wee one's trundle bed. So shut your eyes while mother sings of wonderful sights that be, and you shall see the beautiful things as you rock in the misty sea, where the old shoe rocked the fishermen three, Winking, Blinking, and Nod. That's what I have to say about that.
That was a pretty good poem too.
Yeah, it was a fun little adventure. Seems like a good bedtime poem. Makes me want to go to bed. Good night. I fell asleep on the radio.
I fell asleep on the radio.
But yeah. So there are some poems for the week.